All right, today's program brought to you by Rome Monument. Life is a journey. Memorialize the journey. Allegheny General Hospital helping athletes of all levels in their sports medicine department return to the game. Anthony Jr.'s Restaurant and Pizzeria, home of Pittsburgh's favorite Italian cuisine. Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield, helping you have a greater hand in your health. Pittsburgh Power Arena League football, half the field, twice the excitement. Coons Market, a Pittsburgh tradition, and a brand new sponsor, thanks to Jimmy Mags, just a stone's throw from where we are in Hopewell, the club at Shadow Lakes. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Pratt, Bob Dvorak of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Mark Davis of the Pittsburgh Bottle Shop, the voice of the fan, Ted Arnault, somewhere in space with a shuttle down in Florida. He is live on the phones, but joining us to begin the program and spend the first hour with us, truly a dear friend, a man amongst men, and a great doctor. He is an optometrist from New Brighton, the man that is going to set us straight on the urban legend of Terry Francona, Dr. Brian Lambert. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
All right, now, let's just start this whole thing by setting the record straight. The junior year in high school is the one we're looking at here as far as all of the records, because he was injured his senior year, correct?
That's correct, yep.
All right, take me through this trilogy, and let's set the record straight. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you may want to record this for history, because what this man did as a high school athlete, just talking to Doc, getting an exam here the other night, I'm just absolutely amazed. It's an incredible story. So chapter one, go ahead.
Well, starting in 1976, that was Terry's junior year. For the high school baseball season, he had 39 official at-bats, and he had 30 hits in those 39 at-bats, which works out to be a 769 batting average. And I believe at this day it still is the second highest batting average of any high school kid in the country. He was in Sports Illustrated. It was noted that there was someone that batted 800 in California several years before Terry hit 769. So I've never heard or seen anything that has said those records have been broken. So I believe right now he's still the second highest batting average in high school in the country.
And your beloved son, Nolan, who's all grown up, and I had the privilege of meeting him for the first time, named after your hero, Nolan Ryan. Right. And I just want to bring up one thing about Terry Francona, and that's basketball. Even Bob Dvorak, the Ernest Hemingway of America's great newspaper, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, knew about that. I think, we'll get back to the baseball, but I think that's the most astounding part, not to mention his golf game, but Terry, the basketball player. Tell us about that.
Well, he played basketball throughout. He played in a church league. And
listen to this, guys. Go ahead.
In one church league game, he ended up having 77 points in a church league basketball game. He did not go out for high school basketball his junior year, but he did go out his senior year. And he ended up being the MVP of the section. He led the section in scoring. He averaged somewhere between 25, 30 points a game. But I think the most compelling thing that I can remember is the year before, we were a terrible basketball team. And I think we won only four games my sophomore year. So my junior year, which is now Terry's senior year, I was a year behind him in school. We go out for the team, and Tad Makowicki asked him, what do you think we're going to do this year? And he says, I think we're going to win the championship. I think we're going to win the section. Well, we had Midland in our section, and New Brighton had never beaten Midland at Midland since in the school history. The only time New Brighton had ever beaten Midland was at home, and it was back when Tito Francona, Terry's father, played.
Early 50s.
So we went that period of time without beating Midland. Well, we go down to Midland, and we end up playing this classic double overtime game, and we win 72-70 in double overtime, and Terry had 32 points in that. Hit the game-winning free throws to ice it at the end. It was just amazing. And we ended up being this tied for section champs with Midland due to that win. But to do something that had never been done in the school history before, beating Midland on their home field, was, to me, a memory I'll never forget.
Also, Doc is highly involved locally back in the community, the Merrick Art Gallery, he and his lovely wife. It's a great, great thing. You got to go check it out. But also with the Legion baseball team, and I read a headline the other day, didn't read the story, that they've been having some success. And I want you to talk about the Legion team and how it's connected to Terry Francona as far as what he did back in the day.
Well, after his high school season, you moved into Legion baseball during the summer, and at that point, our high school coach for baseball was Greg Fazio, and then in the summertime it was Ange Gans. That summer, that we ended up playing Legion baseball, there was a couple Riverside boys that ended up joining our team. They were Lenny Pasquale, Ronnie Lee, and Willie Taylor. And these three Riverside boys mixed in really well with the New Brighton kids, and they ended up advancing clear to the regional playoffs. Well, New Brighton hasn't reached the regional playoffs since then, but this year's baseball team is now going to the regional playoffs. So we haven't been there since Terry played. And it's sort of ironic. We actually have two Riverside kids on our team this year in Kenny Wiley and Ryan Finnegan. And they're just great baseball players, but more importantly, they're just great kids.
You've got to talk about Toof George. This guy, obviously, a number of years, a big part of baseball in New Brighton. I started chuckling in the background because I have a friend, Jim Sweeney, who was actually pitching on the mound one time. And my friend Mark Nemesek tells this story about Toof coming out of the dugout. Just give him some grief over something or give an umpire grief or whatever. And he pulls a hamstring like right at and I just, for some reason, if you knew too for what he looked like, he was a caricature of just life in baseball of that golden era. It just brings a chuckle to my to mind. But if you can, tell me about this guy a little bit and what he meant to New Brighton baseball.
Toofic George?
Yeah.
Well, I actually...
Didn't know him.
No, I knew Toofic George because I sold... I was a newspaper delivery boy for him, and he ran the newspaper.
That's what it was. Circulation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he did this.
For the paper boys.
Yeah, so I actually had my first job for Toofic George delivering newspapers.
When you think about him, you just smile. But he was so passionate about baseball.
Oh, he loved baseball.
And he cared so much about it. And there were some great players, the Ricky Freemans, the Jim Sweeneys, and we could go
sure.
on. And Brian, of course, was a part of your junior team. That you were a sophomore.
Yeah.
You were 16-0, right?
Right. Or actually, our 16-0 team, that's, again, we're getting back to 1976, Terry's junior year. We had players, Danny Francona, Terry's cousin, who was a senior, very good player. These were seniors, Dave Anderson, Tom Circle, Danny Peters, Grant Heasley. They could all play ball. The juniors that year were Joe Signor and Johnny Albanese. These kids could play. Matter of fact, Coach Fazio called us in and said, you know, I've never had a team where all the uniforms were passed out and they were all juniors and seniors. There wasn't any sophomores on the team. So he called myself with, among my other two friends, Rick Fizell and Alan Pasquale. He calls us in and says, you know, normally you would make my baseball team, but I don't have enough uniforms for you because the juniors and seniors took them all. So he says, if you want to play on the team, you're more than welcome, but
you
have to play in the JV uniforms, which were these old gray wool uniforms that were hot and ugly looking, and the varsity was in these nice white pants and shirts with red pinstripes, and so we really stood out. But it was funny because the older guys took us in, and actually we were named the Three Gray Clouds.
What?
We were known as the Clouds.
Why was that?
Just because we were like three gray clouds
three
around.
Three pale-looking juniors.
These were the three
sophomores.
You were sophomores. Yeah, these were the three sophomores that made the team that year.
Oh, my goodness.
So we none of us lettered, but we did get in because a lot of times this team was so good they were winning by a lot of runs, so we would get in the last couple innings. But we 10-runned a lot of teams that year.
All right, we're going to come back. We'll wrap up this segment with the Doc, and then we've got lots of stuff to talk about. We're working with Jim Trigenich to try to get a Pirate player to be named later at around 11:30, and Russ Landy will be here after the noon news, GM Junior Scouting and Sporting News. We're going to talk about the latest labor dispute and what's happening, and also Ted Arnault is going to jump in the mix as well, too. Stay where you're at. This is Black and Gold Sunday, 78 degrees, 11:16, Coons Market in Hopewell on KDKA. All right, we're back, 11:19 right now, 78 degrees, Coons Market. Of course, we're in Hopewell. We'll be here right through the Sunday before Labor Day. Then it's back to McKnight Road, Labor Day Sunday. Joining me now, Mark Davis, of course, along with Bob Dvorak, Dr. Brian Lambert, and Ted Arnault in Florida. We'll get to him in a moment. But one more segment about the urban legend of Terry Francona and some other news and notes as we get back to Dr. Lambert. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, the other thing I think people don't realize is, people realize that Terry was a very good hitter, but his high school junior year again in pitching, he had a no-hitter that year, and he also had a .33 ERA, and that in high school you factored into seven innings instead of nine innings. So he actually gave up one run for every 21 innings that he pitched. That's just phenomenal. So he was a great pitcher also. Another thing that I can tell you is the first time I ever went up to his house, we went into his bedroom there, and I saw this wall full of trophies. I couldn't believe the size of these football trophies. They were huge. They had life-size footballs on top, and they were gold. And I thought, boy, look at those trophies. And I said to Terry, I says, Terry, I didn't know you played football. And he says, I don't. He says, those are punt, pass, and kick trophies. And here he had won every punt, pass, and kick trophy in the region. That's not just locally. That's Western Pennsylvania at every age level that he had entered into. So he would have been a great football player. The thing is, football and golf are at the same time in high school, so he actually played golf instead of football, and you couldn't play them both, and he ends up having the school record in golf.
He could grip and rip it, too, as far as golf. That was something and still is, I'm sure, all these years later. Now, he gets hurt his senior year, and so that kind of shelves things. Then he doesn't end up going into the draft. He ends up going on to college, and then he has another just remarkable stay in the desert. Tell us about that.
Well, he did get drafted after high school.
Second round or something like that?
Yes. And he was injured his junior or senior year. And the reason was in this game against Western Beaver, he's playing center field. He only had 10 at-bats in this senior year, but he had already had 8 hits. So he would have been batting 800 at that point. But you have to have more at-bats to qualify for a batting average. But this particular game, we're up by maybe 8 or 9 runs. It's a game that we have well in hand, and he takes this running, diving catch, sort of a shoestring catch, and the front cleat of his shoe catches the webbing of his glove and dislocates his shoulder, pulls his shoulder out of place. And I still can remember that. That view of him just walking in from center field after that, just walking off the field holding his shoulder. And I must admit, we had a good team. We should have continued to win, but our season really unraveled after that.
Well, some sound advice. He decides to go to college, and Arizona did amazingly well. Ended up becoming MVP College World Series?
Yeah, he played 3 years at Arizona. It's my understanding he was the only kid drafted from Western Pennsylvania ever to go to a Pac-10 school for a full-ride baseball scholarship just up until 2 years ago. I can't remember the kid's name, but he was a shortstop for Plum. He was drafted by, I think, Oregon, and he became the second Western Pennsylvania player to be drafted to the Pac-10. Pac-10 baseball is really considered top-notch in the country, and they usually stick with the Southern boys or out west. But a kid from Western Pennsylvania playing for a Pac-10 school is very rare. And as far as I know, there's only been two, Terry and this kid from Plum. But he did end up being MVP of the College World Series. And the most amazing thing he did in that World Series was he had 7 consecutive hits. That was a record until Barry Bonds tied it years later. But he had 7 consecutive hits in that World Series, and that's why he won the MVP.
All right, so then he gets drafted by the then Montreal Expos, or he signs with the Expos, and he's on his way. And let's take it through these few years in which he was leading the league, and he has back-to-back knee injuries, or pretty close to back-to-back within, I think, 2 in as many years. And his career really has changed forever, because obviously he isn't able to hit for power, and he obviously doesn't have the strength. They don't have the sports medicine that they have today, like at Allegheny General Hospital with Dr. Mayo and arthroscopic surgery. And his career is shortened, which I got to believe would have been a whole lot different if these injuries didn't happen. But tell us about that.
Well, there's no doubt about that. He was just a phenomenal hitter. He was leading the major leagues in batting average 2 different seasons before he had season-ending knee injuries. One actually happened in Pittsburgh. Those were 2 key injuries that certainly changed his career statistics and makes it look like he was just an average ball player, where otherwise I think he would have really been known for his hitting if those years would have turned out differently. I had this one newspaper article years ago. I loved it because it had Terry Francona and Nolan Ryan on the same sports page with pictures of them both. And there's a quote on that from Pete Rose that's saying, today in baseball, there's no one hitting the ball better into all different fields than Terry Francona. And that quote comes from Pete Rose, who we know is the all-time hits leader in Major League Baseball.
And Terry played for him for a while, didn't he, in Cincy, or did he not?
Well, they were teammates
rather, yeah, right.
Yeah, they were good friends, actually. Terry has a lot of stories about Pete Rose and his relationship, and so he speaks highly of Pete Rose.
I wish he'd have taken the racehorses that Galbraith offered him. He could have come to Pittsburgh. I would have liked to have seen him play for the Pirates. He was a blue-collar player, there's no doubt. But, Bob, isn't it amazing? All towns have stories. And you grew up in the Uniontown area. I mean, you know, you think of Chuck Muncy, and the list goes on and on. But there's these players from different parts of western Pennsylvania that have taken it to the next level. And because of Mark, we have Paul Posluszny from Hopewell last week. It's feel-good stuff, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and but that was the thing to do. Kids didn't sit home and play PlayStation all day. You know, you were outside playing all year, and it was cyclical. You mentioned, like, Terry with his different sports. You know, you played, if you didn't play football, you were doing something, basketball in the winter, baseball in the spring, and through the summer. And, a little town like Uniontown produced. I mean, in 1965, their high school football team had five guys play pro football. Now, you can't find a
from the same class?
Yeah, in 1965. And that was pretty much, yeah, Ray Parsons was on that team, and Sandy Stevens and Nelson Muncy. It was, you know, it was one of those, that's the way it is. It's just, there wasn't anything else to do. And by God, if you wanted to get out of some of those towns, you better be good to get, a scholarship or make it someplace else.
Yeah, I was at St. Titus just over the hill in Aliquippa last night, and it's kind of amazing. And, Brian, you growing up here can relate to this. You think about the people that have come out of Aliquippa, athletes, the Ty Laws, Darrell Revis, Mike Ditka. And then Tony Dorsett, of course, just played some football over the hill here at the stadium now in his namesake. It's Danny Raines, played with the Bears in 85. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Sure is.
It's a great place. Great place, Beaver County. All right, when we come back, we're going to wake Ted Arnault up in Florida. He's been very patient on hold. We'll get to him. Mark Davis going to open up some conversation. We're hoping to talk to Mike McHenry of your Pittsburgh Pirates, Fort McHenry, as Greg Brown affectionately calls him. So we will try to hold down the fort when we get back. You wrote that line, didn't you?
No.
Yes, you did.
All my ad-libs are practiced.
Repeat after me, Rob. Yeah. Fort McHenry. We'll be back with more of Black and Gold Sunday in a moment. Stay tuned.
KDKA.
Ryan Braun said he pulled a calf muscle, but he's actually home counting his bronze bread, as in cash, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. McCutchen is going to play in the All-Star game Tuesday in the desert. What is it, third full Major League season, batting 292, Bob Dvorak. I'm so happy for that young man.
Yeah, I agree with Clint Hurdle, though. Everybody whiffed on him in the process. He should have been in there before that. He shouldn't have to wait till somebody can't play before he's on that team. But, you know, McCutchen's one of those kids, when you watch him play, he could have played in any era. You just love his speed. You like his attitude. You love the way he hits. He brings an extra dimension to that team. And, one of the great draft picks that they've had in the last decade.
What do you think about this Andrew McCutchen kid, Mark?
I just think he's a great player. He brings a lot to Pirate baseball. ESPN talks about him all the time. A lot of former players will say he's worth the price of admission. There's only a few players they would pay to see watch play baseball, and one is McCutchen. He's a great player. I'm pumping gas today in Bethel Park, and a girl pulls up, gets out of a car. She has a McCutchen Pirate shirt on. I mean, it's just so much hype out there for the Pirates in general, and it's real exciting.
People are dressing up like Pirates in
the
game.
I mean,
I know. I see it. You got your Pirate gear on.
What happened to the paper bags? That was only a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I don't know.
That's the fortitude.
I was out in the rain too long one night, and it just folded. Anyway, Doc, you're a huge baseball fan. You were there last night, and, you know, we were talking about Lau Overbay and how Hurdle jumped up and hurdled him out of the game because he didn't scoop up a ground ball in the middle of an inning. But Clint Hurdle has really made a huge difference on this team, hasn't he?
Yeah, I like the fact that he's not predictable. He doesn't just always go by the book. He goes by some gut instinct, and so far his decisions that he's made by doing that have really worked out well.
Ted Arnault, clear. Okay, he's awake. He's alive. It's alive. Ted, let me ask you about the Nutting family. The chips are definitely falling in the right place for them right now. They've got to seize the moment. July 31st, trade deadline. So do you go to the vault and find that big power hitter, as Jim Rooker has told me time and time again, from the left side of the plate, if they're out there? Do you spend some cash now?
I think they're going to look at it like they've looked at everything as a business decision. If they think that they can get keep people in the stands for the rest of the year by doing that, they're going to do it. And I think, you know, they've shown that they've been very patient, built a team. Now they're starting to reap the fruits of their effort. And it wouldn't surprise me that they bring somebody in because, let's face it, they're in the hunt.
Hey, Ted, you wouldn't have seen the paper this morning, but there's a page one picture of the rabid fans at the game last night, and somebody's got a poster that says, "I heart Nutting." Now, could you have ever imagined that somebody would have said, "I love Bob Nutting"? I mean, 3 years ago, they had the run him out of town with the payroll money.
Yeah, but we've said pretty consistently that, you know, he's going to do it in the same way he builds his businesses. He's going to look for the long term. He's not going to be swayed. Everybody said, let's make them sell the team. We want Mario to buy it. We want this. We want that. And we've said at least pretty consistently that, look, he's got a long-term plan. He's going to stick with that plan, and you know, it's starting to come true.
Who else, Doc, do you like on this team? Obviously, we all love Neil Walker because he's a hometown kid, but who else do you like on this team right now?
I like their pitching coach.
Yeah, what a difference that's made. Huh?
Yeah, the pitching coach has just been phenomenal with these guys, taking like Charlie Morton from what he went through last year and to turn that around. And this Correa, even though he's got off to a rough start last night, I just like the whole team in general. Their enthusiasm, they're hustling, they're doing the little things to win games, and that's what it takes to win in day in and day out. But yeah, they're fun to watch, finally. Yeah, my son, who's 20 now, has never...
He's 20 now?
Yeah, he's never seen the Pirates have a winning season, and I'm hoping that this is his first year.
Well, you know, they always said that the winning is the best deodorant, and it's been 18 long, long, grueling years with this. You know, it's good to see people excited and having fun at the ballpark. And you at least have a decent shot of seeing him win a ball game when you go down.
Is Hanrahan having a career year, or can he do this again, do you think? Actually, maybe not this good, but is he going to be good enough to be around long term?
Actually, he's just broken out. He just got a handle on his stuff and what he needed to do to pitch. So it's a breakout year in that sense, but he could keep this up for a while. You know, it's funny, in spring training, the question was it going to be Meek or Hanrahan as a closer? And Hurdle quickly quelled that debate right away and said, "Hanrahan's my guy." And what a brilliant stroke that was. You stay away from the competition there and just anoint the guy, and he's really paid off. A deserving all-star pick, if there ever was one. And, boy, if he doesn't close that game out in Arizona, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong.
The Meek inherit the bench.
Well, yeah, that's an injury there. It's how quickly they turn. Boy, yeah.
Come on now. All right, Mark, let's talk about not just the Pirates, but what it's done for the business as far as what you're in. It has to help.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody was around Thursday coming in for the game. There was no game on Thursday. You know, everybody's looking, you know, now. Before, nobody would come in for the Pirates. All of a sudden, now, everybody's watching the Pirates. And when McHenry hit that home run Friday night, the place just goes crazy. I thought it was a Steeler game in a restaurant. And just some people are saying that's the biggest play in the stadium's history already since 2001. And just so much excitement, and everybody just looks forward to the games. It's great.
You know, when Terry was in town, Doc, they had their biggest crowd ever at PNC on a Sunday, I think it was. And Terry didn't even get a chance to get back to New Brighton. I don't think the average person, and you know him a hell of a lot better than any of us, day to day, it's just, it's 15-hour, 20-hour days. And I know he would have loved to come back to New Brighton, but there's just no way to get away, right?
No, his days are everything from the time he gets up, it's all plotted out. With meeting with the coaches, I believe he said 2 hours before each game, he has a meeting with all the coaches to sit down and talk over the strategy for that night. And yeah, as far as I know, he did no golfing while he was home. He usually gets around in or tries to with his father, but he didn't come back to New Brighton. But I do know this, the first night in, he had I believe it was 16 hot dogs from the hot dog shop delivered up to the stadium.
Frank Papa and his son Mark are probably grinning ear to ear. He actually had them delivered.
Yeah, and then the next night, I believe
it's the Brighton hot dog shop.
The Brighton hot dog shop. And the next night, it turned into 36.
You can take the kid out of New Brighton, but you can't take the New Brighton out of the kid. And you know what else? Somebody, you know, this Facebook phenomenon showed a picture of him. I think he was at his junior or senior prom. And what made it even worse, not only did he have all that ability, he was damn good looking as a young kid, too. Not to say that he's not good looking today, but he had this lion head of hair. I mean, the guy just had that good chiseled chin, that Hollywood look about him. And there wasn't a sport that he couldn't play. But the most amazing thing that I remember, he was, as he is today, one of the most humble people you'd ever want to meet.
He had a full head of hair?
Bobby? If I'm lying, I'm dying.
No, I'm saying, but the 70s were bad for all of us. That's why all my pictures were destroyed. Did he have? No, if he was at the prom, I'm sure he had the platform shoes and the whole
thing. He looked great.
No, listen, but having dealt with him in professional situations, he did not suffer. He does not suffer fools gladly. I mean, you got to know what you're doing. When you walk into Terry Francona's office and ask him a question, you better be on your toes because he like you said, these guys, I mean, their whole day is baseball. It seems like such a nice profession to be in. Oh, one game a day and you get to travel. I mean, the demands on these people is incredible, especially the ones who succeed, because games are won and lost hours before the first pitch starts, based on preparation and everything else.
Well, you know what Tito said, his father, I was fortunate that weekend when they were in town to talk to Tito on Thursday, and then Terry joined us on Sunday, was the fact that really Terry got the gift of gab from his mother, who was affectionately known, as Doc told me the other night, as Birdie, and he is really so well-spoken. It's amazing. And such a competitor. You know, we're trying to get a little love for the Pirates when he's here. He says, yeah, they're doing it right, but we want to beat their brains in. I mean, this guy, and coming out of Philadelphia, as you mentioned, back in 04, when they really ran him out of town, that had to toughen him up a little bit, don't you believe? Because let's face it, in Boston, it's a religion, baseball, right, Doc?
Oh, definitely, the Red Sox Nation. But, yeah, Terry's first go-around with Philadelphia's coaching was rough. When he first got there, some of their better players had just been traded. He didn't have much. Matter of fact, I can remember a story Terry told about his first year there. They had one good pitcher, and that was Curt Schilling. And he said, so we stood a chance of winning once every four ball games. He said, but this one particular game, midway through the year, they're doing real bad, and Schilling's out there pitching, but he's having a bad day too. I believe it was at St. Louis, where St. Louis Cardinals, they hit a home run, they send off fireworks every time. Well, this particular game, Terry says, Schilling's getting blasted, and he gives up home runs in the first couple innings, and then later on in the game, he gives up back-to-back home runs. And so Terry goes out to the mound, and before Terry even gets into the playing field, he's still in foul territory. He can tell that Schilling just doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't even want him to come out, and he starts saying things like, you know, what are you going to tell me? What are you going to do, this young manager coming out to tell Curt Schilling how to pitch? So he says that to Terry, and Terry walks out, stands there just for a couple seconds, and says, no, I just come out to give the fireworks man a break. And turns around and goes back to the dugout. And I think that's just Terry. He's just a people person. He knows what to say at the right time, at the right place. And there was a particular example there. And Curt Schilling and him are best of friends. Matter of fact, if you recall, when Schilling signed with the Red Sox, one of his demands was he would sign with the Red Sox if they got Terry Francona as their manager, because they didn't have a manager at that point.
I didn't know that.
And Terry was named manager the very next day.
Well, here's something. Theo Epstein is a pretty smart baseball guy, but real quick, and of course, Curt, being from Somerset, you know, grew up loving the Pirates, too. Go ahead, Bobby.
And it was the Schilling had his tendon stapled to his ankle in Game 6 of that
bloody sock.
Right. And that was Terry's thing. Now, Boston's no easy place to manage either. Yeah, they're popular up there. The Red Sox, that's a religion. But, you know, even Moses got run out. And, you're always on in the frying pan in that situation.
Do you think Moses could even bat cleanup?
Well, he didn't have a bad record in rain delays because he could part the waters. But okay. You know, if you
But it's the Red Sox sea. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Sometimes he felt like he was a voice in the desert, if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, believe me, I do. Trust me. If I didn't have myself to talk to, nobody would be around.
Well, that's one of the Ten Commandments that I'll share with you.
And as I said the other day, I've broken every one of them. It's 11:45. It's my penance to continue. Yes, there's another one I missed. We'll be back. Stay tuned. Much more Black and Gold Sunday. And hopefully Mr. Fort McHenry himself, Mike, will join us, as in your Pittsburgh Pirates, when we get back on KDKA. Well, Eddie Kowalik has just summoned me at 1 o'clock, so if I'm not here next week, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go meet him over here at a nice Greek restaurant called George's, hang out for a while, talk some old school. The guy made a CD, and he wrote a book about his mother. And you know how much we love our mothers, right, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't even get any better than that. Only in Beaver County, baby. Only in Beaver County. All right, here he is, Fort McHenry. We're holding down the fort, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mike McHenry in your Pirate program. Michael, welcome to the Berg, and boy, what a trade. We love you. Your first career home run, and things are looking pretty good for the Pittsburgh Pirate, these swashbucklers, as I call them. How are you today? Good morning. Welcome.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Well, it's good to have you here. All right. Tell me a little bit about this team and more importantly, about Clint Hurdle. How's he been able to communicate? And I know you haven't been here for the whole ride, but obviously it's been a good ride.
Yeah, Clint Hurdle, I mean, he's a player's manager. He's a guy that believes in us day in, day out. He thinks we're going to win all 162. I know that's impossible in the baseball realm, but he's a great guy, a great manager, and he's a person of character. And this team's just full of energy, full of life. We're trying to play the game the right way and play hard and, you know, leave it all out in the field every day.
Mike, just recently you're playing AAA ball in Pawtucket. What have you ever heard about Pittsburgh as a baseball town? Because all of a sudden you come in here and this town has gone absolutely bananas over a baseball team. Had you heard much about Pittsburgh before the trade?
No, I grew up in Tennessee, so I hadn't heard a lot about Pittsburgh, but, you know, the Clementes and some of the big-name guys that have come through here, you know, it was always something that I noticed, but I hadn't heard a lot about it, especially the history. But knowing Clint Hurdle and some of the guys on the coaching staff and some of the players, I knew kind of what I was getting myself into. I knew that we were going to be a team that was going to grind and play hard and play the game the right way. And, you know, I wasn't mistaken at all. We really are like that. And to have the fans in Pittsburgh behind us day in, day out, it's been special.
No, the at-bat the other night when you hit the home run, I mean, you're down a count 0-2, and this guy's challenging you the whole way, but you don't give in either. What's your approach at the plate in that situation? And the second part of that was a bigger thrill hitting your first major league home run or helping to win a ball game?
Helping win the ball game.
Yeah.
First and foremost, always as a catcher, I think number one priority is helping win a ball game. Try to get 27 outs, and, you know, if you can help with the bat, you can help with the bat, but... It was a big plate appearance for me, and you know he kept challenging me like you said, and I was just trying to make solid contact, and that's kind of been my goal as of late, just trying to slow it down and make the game a little bit easier, not try to press or try to do too much at the plate.
How many curtain calls have you had in your career?
None. That was the first.
But talk about a special moment, especially for a young player to be, and you hadn't been here for that long, to be called out by the crowd to give that. That's just got to be one of your all-time lifetime memories.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. That's something that, you know, I'll absolutely never forget. I think the only thing that could top that is if it happened in the playoffs, you know, because, you know, the ultimate goal here is to play in October and to continue to, you know, win and see how far we can take this, but I think the only thing that could ever beat that is getting an opportunity to do that in a playoff atmosphere.
Mike, congratulations. We're very proud of you. Losing Domit and Snyder, you've really stepped up. We don't even have a catching problem now. You do a beautiful job.
Well, he's rehabbing Domit. Hopefully he can get traded by July 31st, if you tell the truth. Go ahead, Mike.
You're a great defensive catcher, and your hitting's coming on. You're a great player, and I was telling Rob before, a lot of people on TV and radio has been saying that your home run the other night on Friday night was since 2001, that was the greatest play in the history of PNC Park. How do you feel about that? And people are saying that about you.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, that's very, very humbling and kind of crazy to even think that. But, I mean, hopefully we can have a lot more big moments this year and years to come. And, you know, because this is an exciting ball club. I think we're going to surprise a lot of people. We like to play this game. We have a lot of fun, and I think we play it the right way. So hopefully we can have a lot more moments like that.
Well, one of the big adjustments, though, is not just hitting National League pitching, Major League pitching. You got to handle a Major League staff, and I'm sure you weren't familiar with a lot of these guys that you're now catching. How has it been managing the game behind the plate? Is this where the coaching staff helps you in the game planning and the preparation?
Absolutely. I mean, they've been a huge help. I mean, the first day I got here, I met with every coach for about 20-25 minutes about everything you can think of, and you know, they've been really good with me, you know, been really open, very honest, and same with the pitchers. I've just tried to keep my mouth shut early on and keep my ears open and let them talk to me, and they've done a great job of, you know, when I've asked them a question, they've answered me very professionally, very confidently, and very humbly, and it's been fun. I mean, they've put a lot of trust in me and a lot of confidence in me from the get-go, and it's been a blast. You know, I hope the relationship and everything continues to grow and we get better with each other.
One more question real quick, Mike, and I know you got to go and we got to go to one quick one. Go ahead, Bob.
Is Joel Hanrahan the best closer in the National League?
If not the best, one of the best. He's unbelievable.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great day and keep up the great work on the field and enjoy the All-Star break and savor the moment, okay?
All right, appreciate it. God bless you guys.
God bless you.
Good luck, Mike.
Good
right,
kid. Good
oh,
kid.
Yeah, you can
great
see.
Guy.
I mean, he's having fun back there. You see how he relates to his teammates in the dugout and how the crowd, the city's taken to him. Nothing succeeds like success in this town.
Well, listen, Doc, we're out of time and I want to for this first hour, but I want to thank you and your son, Nolan, and friend Pete for stopping out and sharing all those great memories about truly one of the greatest people I've ever met and truly one of the best athletes, not just to come out of here, but really out of this entire tri-state, talking about Terry Francona and, of course, his father, Terry, and Jeannie, of course, maiden name Nemesak, his wife, just good people all the way around, and you're a special part of my hometown, and the town's a better place with you in it.
Well, we really appreciate everything you've done too, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
Believe me, I won't even come close between what you've done. You're just an amazing individual. You and your wife are incredible people. Thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the day, okay?
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, stick around, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to take a break and wrap up the hour when we come back. And then it's player side, owner side. We'll take a stand, Ted Arnault and I, and draw that line in the sand on the NFL labor dispute when we get back on Black and Gold Sunday. It's 83 degrees coming up on 11:56. The beautiful Coons Market, a busy one in Hopewell Township.
KDKA.
Today's program brought to you by Rome Monument. Life is a journey. Memorialize the journey. Allegheny General Hospital Sports Medicine, helping athletes of all levels return to the game. Anthony Jr.'s Restaurant and Pizzeria, the home of Pittsburgh's favorite Italian cuisine. Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield, helping you have a greater hand in your health. Pittsburgh Power Arena Football, half the field, twice the excitement. Coons Market, a Pittsburgh tradition. And my buddy Jimmy Maggs, the club at Shadow Lakes. Next week, Garen Steele, the club pro, along with Bob Ford, pro from Oakmont, talking British Open. Russ Landy here in a moment, Ted Arnault in a moment, but it is, ladies and gentlemen, along with Mark Davis, the proprietor of the Pittsburgh Bottle Shop, and from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Bob Dvorak, Rob Pratt, and we welcome to the microphone, literally just pulled up to the curb moments ago, Mr. Friday night on a Sunday afternoon, Bill Fontana. How are you, William?
Good. You know, I'm impressed with
get
you,
up bro. Closer to that microphone. You haven't been out of the business that long. Go ahead.
I'm impressed. You know all these big shots. You know, I used to know Rob really well, and somebody said, do I know him? I said, I used to work with him. They said, does he speak to you? I said, yeah. I was in the hall the other day, KDK, and he told me to move.
Oh, no, Jesus.
Now, I understand he's a cure for insomnia, or at least a if you can't sleep, there's something to do while you're listening to the show.
Well, you know what? When you get old, that's what happens.
How about him? He goes, sleep. I hear you all the time. I can't sleep. Yeah. I mean, you're not that old.
I caught you my birthday yesterday, 62. That's up there, Rob.
You're 62.
Congratulations.
I can't see your AARP card at this
no,
point.
But you know what? I heard you this morning, and I'll tell you what you were talking. There was a story, and you mentioned Zernich's name, and I didn't catch the whole thing, but, you know, I can't hear anymore either.
Listen, speaking of that, I got to give your dad some props here. Passed away many years ago. Thinking about the MPI Club, musicians, politicians, and Italians, ladies and gentlemen, San Rocco Festival. Your dad, a big part of that history there. No, wait. I love these social clubs. Don't go there.
I love the Italian people.
I do. Hey. I do. Many of them are my friends. Anyway, that's why I'm here talking to you today. But seriously, folks, tell us about your dad and the legacy. And obviously, he passed away very young, but he was very instrumental in the lives of not just his kids, but many people.
Well, you know, Rob, to me he was, but I think the person that you're speaking of would have been my uncle.
Like I said, your uncle.
And it was Duke Fontana.
Okay.
And he was the first Italian Burgess in Aliquippa. And he died tragically in a car, I believe it's where the Manaca Trestle is, of a heart attack. And the legend has it that all the flower shops in Beaver County. And also, when he passed away, all the flower shops were sold out, and from the Stone Arch in Aliquippa up to this cemetery, there were lines and lines of cars, because he was the first Italian Burgess in the community.
Now, what does that mean, Italian Burgess?
Well, it's similar to a mayor, but, you know, the ethnic background of the Italian people...
Heritage is strong here.
Right, but, I mean, he was the first one elected. You know, it was not a situation where Italian people took over the city of Aliquippa. So it's my understanding, I was only three, that he was very popular.
Now, about some of the legacy, the memories of your dad, and you passed on to Eric and Craig, your sons, and, of course, your wife. Big family, lots of history. Just tell me about growing up in Aliquippa. What was it like, Billy?
Oh, it was someplace special. I grew up actually above a bar, and there were three Fontana families there.
Did you?
Yes, and I went to kindergarten, I think, in the first and second grades at Highland School, which is no longer there. But in those days, when the mill was up and running, it would take you 25 minutes to get through the town. You know, there were over 15,000 people that were employed there. The downtown bustled like crazy, and it was someplace special. And then we moved to Plan 11, and that's where, you know, in Aliquippa, the different plans, Plan 1, 2, 3, 12, the different ethnic backgrounds grew up there. And at St. Rocco, which was a very religious but a special holiday, on the weekend you would see cars from Ohio, Canada, Michigan. They would all come in for this Italian festival. And the people there were very generous. You could go to bed at night and you didn't have to lock your door. All your neighbors knew you, and they took care of you, and they fed you. It really was a special place.
Before I let you go, in all seriousness, you have done so much for high school sports. Long before it became the blueprint of every media outlet in the country, you were doing it with guys like Chris Shovlin, and I was just fortunate enough to be along for the ride. But just tell me about guys like Frank Morocco, Mike Ditkin, Mike Smianic, and just Aliquippa, some of the coaches, the legacies, the people that really have put Aliquippa football and sports, for that matter, not to mention all the players, on the map nationally.
Well, Rob, first of all, I have to thank people like you and Chris Shovlin and Tad McElwicky.
Tad, obviously.
You guys were all very, very strong in the high school scene. And when you were working at the radio station in Ohio, you took advantage of that, and you were smart enough to know. And, you know, people made fun of a local broadcaster on Channel 11 many years ago, but he was an icon. You see what happened. All the television stations tried to emulate
him. Petco's the best. Make no mistake about it. He did something that nobody will ever duplicate.
Now, as far as Aliquippa goes, you know, Mike Ditka is he's a legacy in the Chicago area. I mean, there's no one like Mike. I really didn't know him that well. My children have caddied for him in different events. But Frank Morocco was a special guy because he was a teacher of mine, and he played ball at North Carolina State.
I love him.
And him and Roman Gabriel, as a matter of fact, I don't know if you know, one of his sons is named after Roman Gabriel because he was his godfather.
Didn't know that.
Yes, but Morocco, a tough, stern guy. And, you know, some of the things that he did, he won three WPIL championships in a short time and a state. And then, of course, there's Don Yanessa. And Don Yanessa is the only
Teflon
guy.
Teflon Don.
He's unbelievable. I mean, he was a legacy for Aliquippa. And Smianic has carried that on. And I'm sure you're aware that he is the only coach in the state of Pennsylvania that has won a state title in basketball and football. And it's my understanding they're loaded again this year.
All right. They
understand the community.
Last question, and I got to cut you loose. I got to get to this NFL stuff. Thanks for stopping by. Maybe not in our lifetime, but in our kids' lifetime, do you think that we will see a merger between Aliquippa and Hopewell?
I think, Rob, with what has happened with the state schools and the situations that we're in and the school boards, obviously, whether it be, you know, my wife is involved in one, and she is the food service director at Central Valley High School.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have to come whether you want it or it's forced.
Larry Bruno, greatest coach ever. Who's the greatest coach ever to come out of Beaver County? I'm going to put you on the spot. And they all know where you live, too.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
No.
I mean, there are so many of them, Rob. You know, Bruno,
I want one. Come on. Be a man. Cowboy up.
You know what? I'm going to have to say...
Hamilton?
You know, he's up there. I don't know. That's a tough
one.
Call
come
me.
On. You're Mr. Friday Night. You can answer it on a Sunday afternoon. Do it. Give me an answer. One, the top, numero uno, high school coach, all time. And Render, even though he's not from here, we could throw his name into the hat, too. Come on.
I'm going to go with Bruno Yanessa.
Good.
He reminds me of that old country song. If I had my life to live over, I'd live it over a bar.
Yeah, you know, when you play a country song backwards, you know what you get, don't you? Your wife, your dog, and you get out of jail. But seriously... Your uncle was a politician. You answered that very politically savvy, I must say. You still got off the hook. That's why you're Mr. Friday Night. We love you, William. Come back again. We're here all summer. It's like the Catskills. 3 drink minimum.
You're the best, but there's big shots sitting
here. I know. They have a real job. That's why they're here. All right, speaking of big shots, Russ Landy, thank you for hanging on. Ted Arnault, I promise, all NFL when we get back next on KDKA. This show is getting to the point where you're going to have to become my cut man, Bob Dvorak. It's just like one round after another. I can't even keep my hands up anymore.
Cut me, Mick.
Cut me. Yo. Mark Davis, Pittsburgh Bottle Shop, Bob Dvorak, Ted Arnault, Russ Landy. Russell, thank you. Old home week here. I had to take a chance to speak to my friend Bill Fontana, and I'm glad we had a chance to do that. But now let's talk football with you. Is this thing any closer? We got reports out of Manhattan that they actually spent 12 hours, I believe it was on Thursday, and there was just kind of some logistics involved, and it was going to be all buttoned up. And then the next thing you know, nothing happens. And my friend Ted Arnault, singing with the Ditch down at Fort Steuben in Steubenville, said, I look for it to be August 15th. So somewhere in the middle, is this thing going to be done in our lifetime? Good afternoon.
Firstly, thanks for having me again, Rob. It's always great.
Thank you for holding on, Russ. Thank you.
You don't even have to worry about that. Do I think it's going to get done? Yes, but I don't think it's as close as people think. I think there's a lot of issues, not just between the players and the owners, but between the players that are veterans, the retired players, the rookies, the agents representing them, trying to figure out what to do with this rookie wage scale, and then the owners still have to figure out the revenue sharing and how that's going to work on their end. All of that hopefully will come together, I think, by mid-August. But the reality is, because of that, I think what you're going to see is you may see shortened training camp, and you may see a game or two just them not being able to be ready for full 16 weeks. They may have to do something like 14 weeks or go a little later in the year.
Russ, I'm thinking about, you know, some of the work that has to be done ahead of a training camp. You got that free agency issue with veteran players. You got free agency of the college players that weren't drafted, the potential trades. There's just so much to get done in such a little bit of a time. It seems like there's just going to be so many, I don't know, such a frenzy. There's going to be a lot of mistakes made.
Well, I think there's going to be. I think the one good thing is the teams that are well-run, like the guys there in Pittsburgh, San Diego, New England. I mean, I'm sure they will have no problem. They're not going to go crazy because they probably have had their lists ready. They know what they're going to do. But I think a lot of the teams that historically have sort of been willy-nilly will still continue to be that way, even though they've had all this extra time to prepare. One of the big arguments I've been told, actually, or debates they've been having is, when this all gets said and done, do undrafted free agents get to sign for, say, 7 days before they can start signing unrestricted guys? Or the union wants it the other way, which is there's a 10-day period of unrestricted free agency for veteran players before you can sign any college free agents. So there's a lot of debate, small things that haven't come out yet that are still being, they're trying to hammer out the details on.
Well, there are no small things in negotiations, right? I mean, they can get hung up on something that pushes this back, and I think that's the concern of many fans is, you know, this is the time you want to get geared up. You know, training camps would be on the horizon. You'd start to talking about fantasy football and all that, and right now it's just...
Oh, there's no question. I think one of the big issues you have to look at is unrestricted free agency. While sometimes some teams are able to really hit a home run and get a really good football player, like you saw Atlanta get Dante Robinson a year ago, most of the time you get those guys early. They get a chance to learn your playbook, be through a ton of practices, do all that. Now it's going to be so rushed. I think a lot of the guys that sign as unrestricted guys, the big money guys, and even if they turn out to be good players down the road, this year will be sort of a wasted year because the time it takes to learn the playbook, you get to know your teammates, get to know the flow of the offense or defense, depending on which side of the ball you're on, takes time. And to do that in a rushed situation, I think it's going to be very, very difficult for many, if any, unrestricted free agents to have a really big impact this year.
Hey, Russ, this is Ted. Don't you think that this kind of plays right in the hands, and I'm going to make a real wild stab here, at a rematch between the Green Bay Packers and the Pittsburgh Steelers? I mean, if you're going to look at teams that needed the least amount of tweaking, it's probably going to be those two. Obviously, Green Bay thinking that they're probably going to sit pat or make very few changes. The Steelers maybe need to tweak a few things, and they know what those are. But it just seems to me this is playing right into their hands.
Well, I think it's them, and I think really it's any team where there's no big changes where you have a lot of veteran leadership. I think when you look at teams like that, you have a number of teams. You even have a team like Atlanta that could really benefit from this. Matt Ryan's the young leader. They have a lot of really good players that have been there two or three years that are young, that are starting to develop. I think any team that has talent, a leader at quarterback, and has a lot of stability is probably going to be much farther ahead than a team that's trying to make wholesale changes at some key important positions and still trying to be productive. I think those are the teams that are hurt the most.
Russ, and I couldn't agree with you more as to the various negotiations going on inside each of the groups. I think I don't think the owners have totally ironed out their own situation. The players, they're just going to have to make a move. But if I was going to pick a side that was going to come out and be the winners here, I'd have to go for the owners, because the longer this goes, obviously I think the more cards they're being dealt. The other thing is they're looking for a long-term benefit here. They're looking at percentage adjustments that are going to change what they're going to get 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road. And from the player's standpoint, most of the people that they're bargaining for right now won't even be around in 3 or 4 or 5, 6, 7 years. So the longer this goes, the more, I think, chips that goes on the player side or the owner's side.
Oh, I think there's no question. And I think especially with the court saying, hey, this lockout cannot stay in place, I think that alone puts the ball enormously in the owner's pocket. Not that it says, hey, there's no way that the players can ever sue and win money, but what it does is it says we can lock you out and we can force you to miss paychecks this year. If they had ruled that there could not be a lockout, then there'd be no way to force these players to miss paychecks, and then you basically would be guaranteeing there's going to be some type of compromise this year.
And you look at a position like running back or some of the other positions where really your lifespan is pretty short, and that's a function both of number of plays run and the age. Those guys, those kind of players, are really going to have the onus put on them to try and force their guys to make some compromises here, I think.
Well, I think there's no question. I mean, the reality is when you talk about the owners want are willing to sacrifice, say, $1 billion in the short term for $10 billion in the long term, they're going to be around 10, 15 years from now. You can count on probably two hands the number of NFL players that are right now in the league that will be in the league 15 years from now. So that that's reason alone that the owners have a lot of leverage, because they can say, hey, we'll wait it out. If a few players' careers get lost, that's not the end of the world. We have to make money.
And I think the longer it goes on, the more leverage they got.
No question.
Hey, Russ, what surprised you more, Hines Ward winning Dancing with the Stars or getting arrested on a DUI charge?
I'd say the arrest, and I wouldn't be shocked if it ends up coming out down the road that it may not have been what everybody's making it out to be, but that was surprising me. He's obviously a longtime veteran who knows the lines you are and are not supposed to cross, so I was very surprised to hear that, but I really think it may come out that there's more to this than we think and that he really wasn't crossing any real lines.
Right.
I would have to agree with you. I mean, he just came out that day saying how he has a bad habit of texting while driving, and he has a driver sitting next to him who's totally unimpaired that they allow to drive the car home. It doesn't make sense that he wouldn't have had that guy drive or that person drive rather than driving impaired. It just doesn't seem like Hines, but I guess much like other things lately, we have to let the evidence take its course and see what it's going to do.
Hey, Ted, I was going to start a 50-50 raffle for his defense fund, but...
By the way, I'll be calling bingo tonight at the Polish Falcons Club. So if you're not doing nothing, we'll see you in Ambridge after 8 o'clock tonight. I want somebody to show up. Go ahead, Ted.
B12.
Hey, group, Rob.
It is a dance group. I like the beat and it's easy to dance to. And let me just say this. You and the Ditch rock. I enjoyed myself so much the other night. That was the best night I've had in about 10 years.
You found yourself in a ditch and you didn't get into trouble.
Fort Steuben, the Baker with the beat, Gus Menezes. No, wait. Hermie Granati, Ted, and then Tommy Dorsey and a few others. Give the other two guys credit real quick. Who are they, Ted? I can't remember their names.
Oh, it's Billy Robinson and Carlo Mall, probably one of the best lead guitar players in the entire area.
I still, honestly.
And Ricky Wachowski, who at one time plays with Crack the Sky, one time was voted the best guitar player by Guitar Player Magazine.
All right, hold that thought. Russ, one more segment. We'll come back. Stay tuned. Mark, I got to give you a chance. Pittsburgh Bottle Shop, new and improved. You expanded. The crowds continue. And I know that you are the most humble man, and you're always saying how blessed and fortunate. But it's because of your product, too. Check the website out. It really is a throwback to the way some of those great, really old-fashioned bars were. But it's in the 21st century. You've done a good job there.
Again, Rob, we have a great crowd. I have the exact age group I wanted, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. Great age group.
That's
that
a
comes
good group.
I'm waiting for them to get to my age
no,
group.
No, seriously.
All the sports celebrities come in from Hines Ward. Willie Colon was there a few days ago talking about the contract. Pozlesny was just there 2 days ago also. You know, everybody's nervous about the contract. We got to get this solved. But, again, Rob, this is the second week I've been up here with you, and I'm just amazed. All the people coming by, Rob Pratt, everybody knows Rob Pratt. It's just amazing up here. He's the most popular guy in Beaver County.
And if it wasn't for Bob stepping in the middle of him, they'd get to me.
Mark, I said my suggestion, we should have just an open mic night. People can drive up.
We have to put a chain out there with all these people.
Hey, but let me say something about Mark's place, and I've been there a few times.
We have.
And just a great atmosphere, and he's right. Any age group at all, you can fit in there. They had one of those old radios for me there from the 30s. You could listen to the...
That was Walker night. I was there.
The old Zenith. Yeah. No, it's... No, if you're looking for a place to stop, that you feel comfortable with good food, a good company, and good adult beverages, this place would be.
All right, let me ask Ted and Mark this question. Ted, of course, longtime CEO. I said it on the air this morning. I'll say it again. There's gaming in Pennsylvania in West Virginia because of this man, table games, especially with what he did at Presque Isle. I'll fight anyone to the death about that. It is Ted Arnault. He's the blueprint, the guy who put his thumbprint on gaming in Pennsylvania and Ohio and West Virginia. But let me ask you, Mark, and then I'm going to ask Ted. You got a high-profile person in there, okay? They're drinking. Do you have enough courage to go over to that guy, even if he is your hero on the football field or baseball diamond, and say, look, we got to cut you off, and let us get you a ride home. Have you ever had to do that?
I never had to do that, Rob. Again, we have great crowds there, and the athletes that come in, they're all very well-mannered. They're great people, and I've never had to do that. Of course I would. That's my livelihood. I have 30 people working for us down there.
You tell them the same thing.
I would never jeopardize our liquor license or anything for anyone. But we've never had trouble like that there. They're just great guys.
Ted, what about you? How did you train your staff? Because you had a lot of high-profile people in and around, not just Erie, but down at Mountaineer back in the day.
Well, I mean, you do train them very well. There's courses that they have to go through. There's, you know, we always made sure that our security personnel were aware of what was going on. And really, you don't have usually people with the high profiles. You have people wanting to get near the people with the high profiles that create the issues. But we had very good control over it, and we never had an issue at all.
All right, now let's get back to this NFL labor situation. Russ, one more segment. This is it. Thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you much more as we get close to hopefully football season. You know, Mike Garvin, our producer, brought up a good point, and I got to believe that there is. He said, do any of you guys believe that owners and players aren't really talking? I think down deep. Come on now, cell phones, texting, hey, this person said this to this person, kind of like, the story you told to the first person, and it changes person after person after person by the time it gets to the 10th person. I got to believe there's some sort of communication going on somewhere. They can't lock this thing down that tight, can they?
You mean between, say, the coaches and the players?
No, the owners and the players, I'm sorry.
Oh, I think they're communicating, but I think it is pretty controlled, and when I say that, it's because I think the owners that are involved in the negotiations are really sort of separated from a lot of the owners. They're sort of keeping their own thing. They're not talking to the other owners saying, what are you hearing, what are you this? They know what their marching orders are, and they're going there trying to get it done. The Robert Krafts and the Jerry Joneses, the guys that are really sort of a lot of people believe some of the key guys in order to get this deal done. I don't think they're in much communication with the players. I think it's the rest of the owners might be informally in communications, but I will say the league is really watching these communications very closely. So if they are, it's really being sort of scrutinized very tightly, so they'd have to do it through a lot of back channels.
Russ, what have you heard about the role that Art Rooney II is playing there? Because you mentioned Jones and Kraft, and they're outspoken owners. Art Rooney II, like his father and his grandfather before him, they tend to stay in the background and let the, but they're very also very instrumental, and they carry a lot of weight in these talks. What have you heard about his role in these things?
Well, I've heard that he, like John Mara with the Giants, they're sort of stressing the sort of, hey, let's remember how this league was built sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we want to get the best deal, and yes, we want to, of course, all make money. But let's also remember that, that there are going to be sacrifices necessary from individual owners in order for this league to succeed. So I think you're seeing a lot of the owners that have been in this a long, long time and have seen the league develop, they're really sort of pushing, hey, we understand times are changing and there might be a more need for individual teams to make more money, but we also have to remember we can't sacrifice the good of the league for the health of a few teams. We really have to make sure the league in and of itself stays strong.
Let me ask you real quick. It's just kind of hard for me to believe that this is about money. $9 billion, there's more than enough to go around. Is it an ego thing? Are the owners afraid to lose control?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure that obviously plays some part. But I think the bigger thing, and this is what I've heard a number of people tell me, they think the biggest sticking point in the whole negotiations is that right now they say it's a $9 billion business. And both the Players Association and the league had outside accounting firms look at it and say, hey, where do we think this is going to be 10 years down the road? And both groups were received the number back that it's probably going to be about $25 billion. The owners do not want to maintain the same split as the revenue grows. They want to sort of truncate it and get the bulk of it. And the players are saying, hey, it's worked at this split for many, many years. Why are we changing? And from what I've been told, that's one of the biggest sticking points, because the owners really want to start making a lot higher percentage of that money as we get into that $15, $20, and $25 billion a year dollar revenue.
How much more do they need?
Well, here's the thing: if they don't get this, if they don't get this straightened out, it's not going to be a nine.
Well, guess what? If I'm DeMarre Smith, this right. guaranteed contract stuff, I want a guaranteed contract.
Well,
the volatility of the sport, the average lifespan is 5 years in the game. You're talking $25 billion. If you sign a guy to $100 million for 5 years, and he's putting people in the seats, and you won a Super Bowl because of him, and to put more money in your pocket, then you should give him the money. I mean, come on, $25 billion? Are you kidding me? Unbelievable. Ted, step up.
But, Rob, all you have to do is look at the new college contracts. And if you extrapolate the percentage increase that they've been giving, Russ is not wrong. I mean, it's going to be in that neighborhood. And if you're an owner, you're looking at every basis point, every percent that you can get off that contract base as you were going into it. You can calculate what your rate of return is. So if you're going to lose, let's say a given owner is going to lose $300 or $400 million by delaying the season, or maybe even not having the season, maybe it'll be a little bit more, but you can take your percentage of increase that you're going to negotiate. I mean, you got a pretty good investment by holding pat and waiting. And the players are on the opposite side. They're going to look out, and you know, maybe it's 3.5, maybe it's 5 years on the average, especially for an older player. He's going to start getting antsy, because while the owners can extrapolate their rate of return over a 10, 15-year period, the players can't do that. So, you know, this is business. This is how it's negotiated. And I think the longer it goes, the better off the owners are.
Who put them in the driver's seat? And God rest his soul, but I'm thinking Gene Upshaw. And I was going to ask you about a comparison, Russ, between him and, of course, DeMarre Smith. But who put the owners in the driver's seat? Who was it, Russ, to give them this much firepower?
Well, I mean, I think just the sport in general, because the longevity of the players' careers gives the owners enormous leverage, because the players are not willing to sit out an entire season, because that could end up being 30, 40% of their career. In baseball, one season really is not that big a deal when the average career is much, much longer. I think additionally, I think the owners were put in this spot, a lot of it by the government. When you look at almost every stadium has some tax dollars in it. And you don't see any of these players getting tax dollars.
The
owners are all have all taken an advantage that the taxpayers have helped them build their business, but they don't share any of their profits.
Go ahead, Ted.
Comment on the fact that the antitrust rules have been bent pretty much for the owner's exclusive benefit.
Oh, of course. Because
so that to me is what really gave them the firepower to sit back and make these rules and enforce these rules, because any other business would be bumping up against some antitrust issues that could potentially collapse that. The NFL is not.
There's no question. That's one of the biggest things there is. And I mean, that's why you had that lawsuit back in the free agency with Reggie White, and that's one of the reasons that Brady and Manning are part of that lawsuit now. Because if this doesn't get settled, then they end up going to court. The players are going to get some significant damages against the owners. So this is one of those situations where both sides have some reasons to get it done, but the owners have a lot more leverage right now.
Well, the other, Russ, you hit on it, that there were franchises, you know, Baltimore moving to Indianapolis and Al Davis moving from Oakland to L.A. back to, you know, when cities were in bidding competition for franchises. And then you have four networks, and now the NFL has its own networks, just throwing themselves in the path of these guys saying, please let me put you on my TV. I mean, you know, they don't have to do anything to be put in the driver's seat, Rob. People are throwing themselves at them because it's the most successful sports.
And I don't know what Russ thinks about this, but I really like the NFL network. I mean, it's like a part of my daily tradition with my son, Robbie. We always watch at least an hour or so of the NFL network. And they have come leaps and bounds since that first game at the Hall of Fame with Brian Gumbel doing play-by-play and the raindrops on the camera lens. I mean, they have really gone over the top, and they're getting better. And I got to tell you, Russ, I got to believe sooner or later they're going to say, forget you. We're going to air our own games. You're going to have to pay to watch them. Plus, sponsors are going to have to give us the money, and they're going to own the whole candy store. So even networks are going to have to start to say, how much power, you know, whose side do we take here? Because sooner or later, we could get left out in the cold.
Well, I think the only issue, and trust me, I agree with you. I love the NFL Network. The only reason I think that it's going to be hard to get them to put it all on the NFL Network is they would have to charge the fans a lot of money. Because I think if you look at the actual advertisers' dollars, that does not bring in near what these networks pay them. And I think they would have to charge significant sums, somewhere in the vicinity of maybe $15 to $20 per person that that buys a game.
Right, because, so, you know, yeah, I mean,
people love the game, though.
A network will be willing to lose money on the NFL games it's broadcasting because those viewers will stay on to watch Dancing with the Bars later on.
I mean, just look at the perfect example. Since CBS got the NFL back, they've been the most watched TV network. Period.
I'm going to say this about CBS. They sign the checks, but they do the best job covering the NFL, bar none. They do a great job. Russ, there's nobody any better. Tell us about GM Junior Scouting and why people need to check it out.
Well, they need to check it out because we're just growing and expanding, and we're going to be doing more TV this fall, and we're going to tell you everything there is to know about the NFL draft and probably even about the NFL. So whatever there is to know, they can go to gmjrnfldraft.com.
Hey,
Russ, how have you geared up to handle the tremendous amount of work that's going to have to be done in a short period of time covering all these free agent rules and all that? You've got to be gearing up for that.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely getting ready. It's going to be a little bit hectic and crazy, but we have our lists ready, and we're just ready to, as soon as they launch and say, hey, we're ready to roll again, we can start looking at which free agents are out there, which ones are best suited for what teams, and start writing about which teams made good decisions.
Well, I would say that it's important for anybody who's really interested in the NFL is to tune into your place because, man, it's going to be fast and furious.
It's going to be crazy, no question. They can also check everything out at the Sporting News. Everything I do is up on thesportingnews.com.
Okay, smooth as a slab of butter on a picnic table on the 4th of July, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, you went right there.
I was trying to get there. Ted just said, are you sure you want to go there? I did go there. We'll take a break. Listen, Russ, thank you so much. Come back again real, real soon, okay?
You got it. Anytime you need me, Rob.
Ted Arnault, you got to love him. We'll come back more. I love how they talk all these legalese stuff, you know? It's like reruns of Perry Mason. You just have to watch the last 5 minutes when the guy breaks down on the witness stand. No further questions.
You got to be Ralph Sindrich to understand.
Oh, believe me, Ralph understands everything. Yeah, we'll take a break. Stay tuned.
Every weekday, noon to 3, we need to talk.
Charlie Lotz, the Bambino, Mike Garvin handling duty here along with Summer. And, of course, it is Bob Dvorak and it is Mark Davis, Pittsburgh Bottle Shop, Ted Arnault. Might as well finish up with the NFL. Ted, why August 15th? You said that to me the other night in Steubenville. And by the way, Dominic Musi Jr., their fine mayor, 19 years running, is going to be with me talking about that city, which has really come to life under his leadership. They're doing some amazing things down along Dean Martin Boulevard in eastern Ohio. You've got to get down there. It's just a gorgeous, gorgeous place. But, Ted, honestly, why August 15th? Why did you tell me that?
Because I think that's kind of a break-even date to have the whole season. I think August 15th, you get 2 weeks to prepare, maybe have a couple of quick preseason games, and you start the season off. I think after that, you start eroding into the season. I think that's just, I know that even that's going to be pressing it. You might have to delay the season a week a little bit. But I think if you go beyond that, then you do start eroding what both the players and the owners are going to make. And I think there's a lot of motivation to still have the whole season show. So I think it might be a little bit different than what we're used to, but I think they're still going to be able to get it all in if they get it done by August 15th. I think the owners are going to drag that to the very last minute, and I think when it hits, it's going to hit big.
You think so, Bob?
Well, I think this brinksmanship is very dangerous stuff. It reminds me of these politicians talking in Washington about the budget and the deficit and everything else. And the longer you let that go and that deadline approaches, there's the danger of making a mistake or underestimating the other side grows and grows and grows. Actually, I don't think they're going to get it done. I think there's just too many tricky issues, and as spectacular a spectacle as football is, that they're going to mess this up.
I don't think so, Bob. I think August 15th, you're going to see them fired up and going. There'll be a frenzy. You'll have free agents flying all. That's why people want to stick with Russ Landy and follow his program at sportingnews.com, whatever else that he's got going, because, man, it's going to be a 24/7 program when that hits.
Well, if you thought the NHL week was frenzied during that 1 week of free agency, that's going to pale by comparison.
Absolutely.
Floodgates open up, yeah.
But Mark. I really think that it plays into the hands. And I said the Steelers and Green Bay, I think they're the most obvious ones. But you get a team like Baltimore. Get some of the really established teams. It's going to be hard to compete with them because they're filling pretty much the same slots with players they got, maybe tweak a little bit here or there. And, for the young teams, the teams that got to put a bunch of new players on the field, it's going to really work to their disadvantage.
Mark Davis, how much does this mean to your business to have the Steelers play football?
It means a tremendous amount. I mean, when the Steelers
play... Is it like your Christmas? I mean, is it that big?
The bar business, restaurant business, we're busy. Right after summer, like in September until usually April, then when the nice weather hits now, you slow down just
a little. Is it a key to your calendar year?
We're busy all the time, so I'm very lucky, but yeah, absolutely. And I feel bad for some of the players because they're all in limbo. They have 4 years. Are they a restricted free agent? Are they going? Are they staying with the same team? It's very, very hard on them also. It's July 9th or 10th already?
10th.
And I don't know. Sometimes I agree with Ted. I think the deal is going to be done, but get our hopes up the last couple of weeks in the paper. Well, it's a done deal. It's just this and that.
Well, Bob, let me ask
tough,
you. D'Amari Smith, how does he rank with Gene Upshaw, who was a rock?
Yeah, I think he's one of the...
Is he overwhelmed?
There's a lot of ego involved in this, and he's trying to get the best deal he can, and he thinks he can get a better deal than Upshaw got. So I think there's some maneuvering like that on his part. He may be better for the players as far as getting the benefits that they're seeking, but if Gene Upshaw was still a player's rep, this wouldn't happen.
Hey, Bob, let me say one thing. I think he's better for the Players Association, but not better for the players. And there's a big difference.
Good way to say that.
Okay, then explain the difference.
Well,
Players Association is kind of like the NFL. They're going to be around. They're
going to get their union dues from future players.
Yeah, they're going to get stuff from future players. They're going to, they're looking at their own business model and what they're doing. But the individual players that are out there that have limited life in this industry, I don't think that he's necessarily doing a great job for them.
Right, it's the guy with 1 or 2 years left, if that, that's really on the bubble here, and they're hanging over the edge, wondering if there's going to be a season, if they're going to get paychecks.
Well, how about what Paul Posluszny was saying last week? Here's a guy that's been injured, not really lived up to his potential, but he also knows where he's at as far as his chronological age is concerned. So he's got to get the money now, obviously, because of what he can still bring to the table for Buffalo, and he can't afford, just like that rookie coming in, each of these guys, no matter where they're at in their career, if their contract's up, coming in midway through their career, first couple of years in, they have to cash in now.
But, and you see Peyton Manning's comments. He had the neck issue, but he hasn't been able to rehab with the team trainer and the team things. And you say, well, he says he's behind because he doesn't, you know, trust the guys he's working with. Those are all kinds of issues that are just backing up here.
Listen, Ted, you were in the gaming industry. Even the house has to let the customer win once in a while.
No.
They do. Come on. I mean, you don't build billion-dollar buildings in Vegas. I mean, you're making money. We know that. But you got to let somebody walk away and take a picture.
Robbie, you can't sit there and look at these guys making millions of dollars and say that they haven't won. This whole franchise, this whole system.
Yeah, but when they're crippled up 20 years down the road, come on, Ted.
Yeah, but they still benefited all those players. If they didn't have the marketing potential of the NFL, if they didn't have the franchise that is the NFL, none of those guys would be making any money.
All right.
They might be
making a little bit of money. Hey, by the way, I got to take a break, but I do want to say one thing. Childhood hero passed away this week. 69-year-old, truly 10 years in the league, an all-pro, the prototype tight end. We're talking about John Mackey. God rest his soul. We'll come back to wrap it up next.